Welcome to Off the 99, a weekly radio show about news, politics, and all things Merced, brought to you by the Merced Sun Star and KYOS. I'm your host, reporter Jonah Owen Lamb, with my co-host, Jamie Oppenheim, and this is Off the 99.
Education reform has been in the news a lot in recent weeks. First, the LA Times printed a news story connecting individual teachers with student test scores. And on August 24th, the United States Department of Education announced that California will not receive Race to the Top funding, Obama's second competitive round of education stimulus funding. It's been almost 10 years since the Bush administration enacted No Child Left Behind, and the Obama administration is furthering those mandates with ideas like merit pay for teachers. This week, Off the 99 decided to look into the past, present, and future of educational reform to see what these initiatives have brought to the classroom. We spoke with Diane Ravitch, a longtime education historian and author of a new book called The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education, about her thoughts on the current administration furthering the mandates of No Child Left Behind. The Sun Star also spoke with two local high school teachers, Josh Pedrozo and Joel Sebastian, about what it's like to teach in the era of accountability. This is Off the 99.
I'm Diane Ravitch. I'm a professor at New York University and a historian of education. I've been writing about and studying education for more years than I want to remember, about 40.
Can you talk about your recent book?
Sure. My recent book is called The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. And it quite astonishingly hit the New York Times bestseller list and has been, it's just been a sensation. It's had me traveling across the country since the book came out in March, and I have a very intense speaking tour, again, starting this fall and lasting through most of next year.
So tell me where inspiration for the book came from.
Well, the inspiration came from several things. First of all, I had been affiliated with a number of conservative think tanks and had been a supporter of testing, choice, accountability, merit pay, charter schools, on and on. And over the past few years, I started watching, I supported these as they sounded like good ideas, let's try them. And as more and more places tried them, the evidence began to accumulate, and I began to get uneasy and to think, I don't think these things are going to work. In fact, I think they're having a very negative effect. And the more I began to question my own views, the more convinced I became that that our country is on the wrong path. And so the book began as a critique of, I guess, first of all, myself, but also the Bush administration and No Child Left Behind, and also this infatuation with privatizing public education, turning schools over to private entrepreneurs, and thinking that government's always going to do a bad job. So as I continued on this path, in the meanwhile, as I was writing the book, the Obama administration came into office, and much to my, I would say, shock and horror, they were saying the same things as the Bush administration. And Race to the Top, I concluded, was just an extension of the Bush administration's No Child Left Behind. And if anything, it's even worse because teachers are going to be judged by student test scores, which is something that the Bush administration hadn't even thought to push. And I guess that what's most disheartening about the Obama administration's approach is that teachers now feel there's no place to turn. Before, they could have turned to the Democrats in Congress to stop the excesses of the Republicans. Now they have no one to stop the excesses of the Obama and Duncan administration. And so that's kind of scary. So the book came out in March of this year, March of 2010. And I think that it really struck a chord. As I said, I've been lecturing around the country, and I ended up being honored by the National Education Association as its Friend of Education for 2010. And I'd say that over the past 6 months, I've talked to, conservatively speaking, 30,000 teachers, and I find that overwhelming rejection of the kind of tough-minded accountability and privatization that has swept the elites in this country, that they just seem to be out of touch with what's really happening in the schools.
And how is this impacting students?
Well, I think the way it impacts students is through the very, very strenuous focus on testing, standardized testing. Most of the tests are not very good tests. They're bubble tests where students pick one out of four bubbles. So all over the country, we have children who are being drilled again and again and again about how to take tests. And sometimes the test scores go up, sometimes they don't. But most of the time, kids aren't actually learning the material. They're just learning how to take tests. And so we see that the national scores, the ones that are run by the federal government, have changed very little over the past 8 years of No Child Left Behind. But the main impact that it's having on kids is that the emphasis on testing of reading and math is depriving students of the time that they need to study everything else, the arts, science, history, geography, civics, literature, foreign languages. Some districts have cut back on recess. Some have cut back on physical education. This is just terrible. And where it's most terrible is where the kids have the greatest needs, and that is in the inner-city schools and poor and minority schools. But it's not limited to those schools, because this trend towards testing as the be-all and end-all of education is affecting every school in the country.
Having some accountability is obviously good. So what do you see as sort of a medium between this excessive testing and then...
Well, accountability is good, but unfortunately, the word accountability has morphed into a synonym to mean punishment. So who are we going to punish? Which schools are we going to close? And this is not really accountability. This is just a mean-spirited and, frankly, a stupid approach to education, because the schools with the lowest scores are the kids that have the most poverty and the kids who don't speak English. And so if you just go by test scores, all you're going to do is end up identifying schools that have very high levels of poverty, very high levels of homeless families and kids enrolled in the schools, very high levels of non-English speaking children, and then those schools will be held accountable, and under the Obama administration approach, the principal will be fired, the staff will be fired, the school will be closed, and then new schools will open to replace them, but they'll still have the same problems. So this is not accountability, this is just some sort of, shallow and superficial and unwise thinking.
A lot of people, have said that charter schools are the antidote to some of those problems of, inner city schools. That how do you see charter schools as helping the situation?
Well, the original vision of charter schools, I thought, was very inspiring. The original vision was that charter schools would recruit the kids at the very bottom. They would find the kids who were disengaged with schooling. They would bring them back into the mainstream. They would help them. They would find innovative ways to motivate them about their schooling. That was, I thought, a very inspiring vision. However, that's not what charter schools are today. Charter schools today, because of the whole regime of high-stakes testing that the federal government and the states are forced to follow, charter schools go into the poorest communities and skim off the ablest students. They skim off the most motivated students. They have a lottery. And the homeless families never know that there's a lottery. The non-English speaking families don't know that there's a lottery. It's been well documented by now that charter schools have a very disproportionately small number of kids who have limited English proficiency. They have a disproportionately small number of kids with special needs. And what happens is that when they go into a poor community and skim off the most talented, most motivated kids, the regular public schools are worse off, because they then have even larger numbers of the kids who are most difficult and most challenging to educate.
And so then what do you see as a solution to all of this?
Well, the solution is that we should look to the highest performing nations and try to improve our educational system. We should stop closing down schools, stop firing principals, stop firing teachers, and look for ways to support and improve and encourage and to inspire, make things better, give teachers far better introduction into teaching, try to recruit, Teach for America recruits the best young people, or the smartest young people from the most elite colleges. but they only stay 2 or 3 years and then they're gone. That's not an answer. An answer is to work on improving the education profession so that people see it as a career and as a profession, and so that it attracts the best people with a measure of job security and respect and recognition, and also to try to have principals who are experienced and who have a lot of knowledge of what good teaching looks like, because they're the ones who do the evaluating. They're the ones who award tenure, and tenure, by that I don't mean lifetime tenure. They just award due process rights. Mm-hmm. So we really need to strengthen the profession. We need to strengthen the curriculum, make sure that every child has the right to have and access to the arts and science and the whole range of subjects that we consider important in education. And we need to improve the way we test kids, get rid of these bubble tests, and have assessments that really figure out whether kids have learned what they've been taught, whether they assess what they know and can do, and not just their ability to guess the right bubble. And then, you know, beyond all of that, we have to recognize that the single biggest determinant of low academic performance is poverty. And until we can address racial isolation and poverty, we're going to continue to have low academic performance from the kids who live in very racially isolated and very impoverished communities.
Some people would say that, you know, Jeffrey Canada has a good solution with his Harlem Children's Zone. Would you?
Well, I like the Harlem Children's Zone. He has not, on the other hand, created a high-performing charter school.
Right.
But I like the Harlem Children's Zone because he recognizes the importance of early childhood education, of making sure that parents are educated, and the whole range of things. It's very, very expensive, and to do the Harlem Children's Zone on a national scale would require the kind of commitment that we've not been willing to make up until now.
Okay. I was asking local teachers about merit pay and sort of asking about, you know, what that would do to them, and then they said that they would definitely start teaching to the test.
Oh, sure. I mean, the problem with merit pay is you're paying people extra if they focus more on the testing, and you're also paying them to compete with one another. And some people, maybe Secretary Arne Duncan, would say, that's good, we want teachers to compete with one another. But then you destroy the heart and soul of a school, because the heart and soul of a school is not competition, it's collaboration. Mm-hmm. It's people working together towards a common goal. Their common goal is not who can make the most money and which teacher gets the highest test scores, but how can we make sure that every child in the school is paid attention to, that if a child is falling behind, that we can work together and figure out what we need to do to help that child, that whether it's Johnny or Maria or Juan or whatever, that child needs our help, not to have teachers competing with each other to make sure that the child gets a higher test score, but so that teachers can talk together and work together to surround that child with the support that he or she needs to do better.
Okay. I don't know if I have any other questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I think the other thing that has been fascinating, two things. One is the LA Times releasing the scores, the test score data, connected to individual teachers. I think it's a terrible thing because, again, it's first of all, technically invalid, and I don't think you'd find very many people knowledgeable about testing. I'm speaking about the leading testing experts in America who would say that the data they're releasing is technically valid, has lots of problems. And the other is that I think that as the American public begins to understand the agenda of the Obama administration, the disapproval for it grows. There was a Gallup poll that was released just this week that said that last year at this time, 45% of Americans liked the education reform plans of this administration. It's now down to 34%. So people are figuring out they don't want their neighborhood school to be closed. They don't want the teachers to be fired. They don't want the principal to be fired. And I think as the punitive nature of this becomes clear, this is going to be a really negative aspect to the president's job rating. So I would hope that somehow he would listen to what's happening at the grassroots. People want their neighborhood schools to get better. They don't want them shut down.
Anything else?
That's all.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay,
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
My name is Joel Sebastian. I'm a teacher at Merced High School, and this is my 13th year of teaching. My name is Joshua Pedrozzo. I'm a teacher at Merced High School as well, and this is my third year teaching.
Do you guys want to talk about some of the changes that you've seen over the past few years since you started teaching in terms of school assessments and the emphasis on testing and what that has done to students or education and how students are mastering subjects?
In my short time, what I've seen is there's been a huge emphasis put on testing and how we test the students and what we do to test the students. I know that in the first round of the reforms with No Child Left Behind, it was really test-driven, making sure the students are achieving the objectives or the standard that's put before them. And it was a really good program, but it laid out a lot of good ideas and good things to happen and that could really happen. But it didn't address how to pay for some of these programs, and it really handcuffed some school districts and throughout the state. This new Race to the Top program is where they are looking for the most qualified teachers, the most qualified principals, administrators, whatever, to where it's all on the testing and all on the student. And how can we, how can the student, or how can the teacher improve the test scores? Not so much anymore about, what are we teaching, or is it, here's the test, go along with it. And so what I've seen is, it's kind of, that's how they monitor us teachers. By looking at the test and just kind of seeing, how have they improved?
So like recently in LA, I think the LA Times wrote a story about they printed all the test results for students and tied them to teachers.
Yeah, exactly. Which obviously, it has some merit for some teachers who aren't performing well, but really you don't teach, when you're in the classroom, you should have some autonomy on how you can deliver a lesson. And what they're trying to do is they want everybody to deliver lessons the same because it's based off of a test, these tests that we're giving. And so if a student does poorly on a test, then it reflects bad on us because we're not teaching the right way to that student.
What do you think they're leaving out? I mean, when you talk about a student and their achievements, I mean, as a teacher, it can't be all laid at your feet. What does this kind of calculation leave out in terms of understanding of full picture of how a student's educated?
Well, there's a lot of different things, and you have socioeconomic background on the student. You have to remember with us, we're dealing with teenagers, and teenagers' moods and attitudes and what they're going through and feeling change every day. You can have something bad that happens at the home in the morning, and then they test that day, and then they don't, they don't do so well on the test because they're still thinking about something else. Some kids come to school that don't have lunch, or who haven't had breakfast, who haven't had lunch, maybe had a rough night the night before because they got in a fight with their parents or whatever. And so they come and they're tired, they're hungry, whatever. There's all these variables that go into how a student succeeds. You can have the best teacher in the world, but you also have to have a lot of tools to make something like this work.
Another issue is that it kind of narrows down what you can teach compared to when I first started. With the standards, you really need to be on pace, and it's at an accelerated pace maybe than what we were doing 10 years ago. So you don't have time for some of those projects where kids can really connect sometimes because you're moving on to the next lesson. So that can make things a little difficult too.
What was it like when you first got here? Just what was it like?
I started in special education, and I was basically given a list of classes and good luck. Starting on Monday, and there wasn't the support that we give new teachers now. So it's been really positive what's happened over the last 10 years in that regards. We have teachers that have a mentor teacher. We have weekly or bi-weekly subject facilitation where we get together as a department and we can help provide materials and support to new teachers. So I think teachers today have a lot more support coming in. They have an established curriculum, so they know what they need to be doing and when. Whereas before, you're kind of sink or swim, here you go, and that's why we had such a high rate of teachers leaving within the first 5 years. So that's been a positive. I don't know if that was that way for you.
No, what he says is exactly right. But I've also noticed too, because I've been lucky, I've had some really good older teachers kind of show me the ropes and take me, help me out with stuff. And I've been very grateful for that. But along with what Joel said, you know, you have these standards that they put out for us, but it doesn't leave us time to really address some of the resource kids or some of the ELD kids who are taking these tests as well. And we're streamlining all these special needs kids, the resource, the ELD, the kids who aren't, you know, first, English wasn't their first language. And so when you have to really hammer it home, it takes some kids a while to figure out some of this stuff, so it hurts their ability to kind of get what they need to understand.
Do you feel like there are some critical skills that some students are missing out on because there's such an emphasis on testing and test taking, and you know, maybe they're not developing critical thinking skills? Or
absolutely. I think that they're not developing critical thinking skills. I don't think you have to. I think that a student has to be successful in college and stuff like that, but I don't think that we're able to do that now because we're basically telling them, you know, we put so much emphasis on these tests that if you can, you know, pick an answer out of four, that's all you need to do. And it's not really telling them, you know, they're not developing those higher level thinking skills that they're supposed to develop to make them, you know, successful in college. I have I knew a guy who is a professor in college, and he was saying that students don't know how to read. Freshman students don't know how to read when they get up to college because they're not, or at a college level, because they're not being taught, you know, how to summarize, how to take out the most important parts of, you know, a reading or something like that. And so it's really putting them back and putting the students even further back because, you know, they're not educationally or mentally at a place where they're supposed to be.
And Joel, have you seen like much of a change in kind of your students and kind of what they're learning over the 13 years you've been teaching?
Well, for me, it's been a little bit unusual because, like I said, I started out in special education and then I switched from that to advanced placement. So I've seen a range of students. One of the things that we've done recently is go towards more of a full inclusion model with special education students, and that has positives and negatives. By bringing them into the mainstream classroom, they're getting full access to the curriculum. It cuts down on behavior problems.
What about for just the average students and kind of what you're seeing in terms of how this gearing them towards taking a test? I mean, have you noticed a change in kind of, you know, you see a student come in as a freshman and as a senior, you know, what's the difference between the kids now and maybe 8 years ago?
I think the kids are still pretty much the same. I think the teaching style has changed to a degree. Once again, you're so focused on making sure you cover all the standards by end of the third quarter. You're testing in April, so you have to get through a year's worth of curriculum in a shortened time period. So once again, there's that push to go through things and then try to figure out if the student doesn't understand it, how are you going to reteach it, yet still be moving forward to cover the content in time for the state test. So it kind of puts a time crunch on everything.
And one of the things also is the fact that it's not necessarily, because one of the coolest things about being a teacher is that the students don't change. It's not, you know, you're going to get a group of freshmen where they're still dealing with the same problems that freshmen deal with. But what they're not getting is, if in the elementary school level, now it's the same as what I spoke about with the college. They're not at a place where they need to be in order to, you know, get the information or comprehend information quicker, because that they haven't been taught, you know, those higher level thinking skills where they should be in ninth grade. I think that Joel hit the nail on the head by saying it's the teaching methods are the things that change the most. It's the emphasis on what they put on us and how they want us to put, you know, what they want us to do with certain things. It's that's the biggest thing that's changed. It's this, you know, all inclusive, everybody does the same thing so that we can do it. And what the problem with that is, if they want everybody to do the same thing, it takes away, you know, that independence that we have to deliver curriculum in a way that we think is best suited for the students so that they can succeed.
So do you feel that, you know, placing such an emphasis on tests has taken a lot of, I mean, I hate to say this, the joy out of teaching?
I don't think it'll ever take the joy out of teaching, because it's going to work every day. I mean, I go to work every day and I'm dealing with 180, you know, kids that change on a daily basis. So I think that part, and the subject level, I love the subject I teach. I love getting involved with it and helping the students out. It hasn't taken the joy, but it has become frustrating. And it's something that, you know, we have to deal with. And there's no use getting too upset about it because it's not going to change.
Are there ways to make, you know, teaching to the test a little bit more exciting than how it sounds to the average person?
I wouldn't say that we're teaching to the test as we are teaching to the standards. And I don't have a problem with the standards. You said about, does it take away from the joy of teaching? I love teaching. And, you know, being here for 12 years now, you see trends. Some systems come and some go. And accountability is not necessarily a bad thing. And within the classroom, I can pretty much teach the standards how I want to teach them as long as they're covered. So for me, I still have a lot of options in how I want to teach. And teaching some of the higher level courses like the AP, you know, we still get the intellectual discussions, the debates, and I love it still. It's not a problem there for me.
Do you think that this whole idea of, you know, if teachers aren't, their kids aren't testing a certain level, they should be fired is a good idea? I mean, some districts are talking about this, or I don't know if they've already done it. It's kind of get rid of all the teachers whose students aren't doing well on tests.
I don't think so. I think that you need to, if it's like I said, if I'm going to be, if my students are taking a test and I'm going to be graded, if you will, on how well my students perform on this test, well, then I want to make sure I know everything that that student is doing the entire day. You know, making sure that they've had 3 square meals a day, making sure that, you know, their parent life, their home life is okay, they have, you know, clean clothes, they're not, you know, all this other stuff. I want to make sure, because all that plays into how a kid comes to school and how they react and stuff like that. I totally agree with Joel. There has to be accountability, and there's ways to make teachers accountable. I just got my tenure, so my 3 years, so I had to go through everything, do everything, be observed, you know, all the time to make sure that I can control a class and make sure that I knew what I was talking about. That's how you should, you know, grade teachers. How can they handle a classroom? And if not, give us the tools that you know that we need, the collaboration. Like,
do you think other teachers and who administrators at the school should be the ones kind of making sure you're doing your job? Or?
Absolutely. I mean, I think about administrators coming in to my classroom and spending, you know, when administrators would come in, they'd spend a good, you know, the whole class period. And so they could tell, okay, this person can do it, or no, this person can't do it. They've seen it long enough. And so they're the ones that are better judging, you know, if a teacher can teach, really. It's not a test score.
Do you think incentivizing, you know, increased test scores is something that could be effective, like merit pay increases for?
Well, then I really would teach to the test. I mean, if it was an incentive or a merit-based thing, then I'd make sure that my students were, you know, the best.
And there was a year, I don't remember what year, when they were giving... The state was giving out financial incentives to districts and schools that performed well on these tests. And I remember we at Merced High met those goals and got a little bonus for that. But I think if you love teaching, you're going to teach the best of your ability regardless of, you know, what incentives are offered. And you don't want people to try to game the system for reason that they shouldn't be doing it.
I don't think I have anything else I wanted to add. Is there anything you guys want to add?
No.
Gentlemen, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right on.
You're listening to Off the 99, a weekly radio broadcast produced by the Merced Sun Star and KYOS 1480 AM. We can be heard weekly at 6 p.m. on Saturday and 6:30 a.m. on Sunday, or all the time at mercedsunstar.com. This show was produced by Jonah Owen Lamb and Danielle Gaines. We'd love to hear from you. Reach us at offthe99@mercedsunstar.com or by mail at 3033 G Street. This is Off the 99.